Wow, we're here. Hi.
Here we are.
Welcome to Brown Girl Bible, everyone. I'm so wah, pumped. Yes. We've had caffeine.
Just a couple of sips.
And we obviously are social distancing. So because of that, Lauren is actually home here in Cleveland. So we're in the same room. Typically, we are 2 hours apart, but we are together.
What up, 216? Repping it hard. Y'all don't even know what it is.
You don't. So welcome to Brown Girl Bible. I'm Taylor.
I'm Lauren.
Yes, and obviously we're social distancing together because we are sisters. If this is your first time tuning in, you may have not known that. So welcome to our podcast on today.
Hey. Great. Good.
Ooh, we're good. Wow. So y'all, today we're actually going to do something really different with Brown Girl Bible. We also apologize for our little break.
The hiatus. Truly in a time where there is the least excuse for hiatus. I've been in this house with Taylor for the past 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the quarantine has us all just doing our best out here. So,
mm-hmm. We're trying hard. And we're here and we're back. And we're actually going to be turn it up starting today. So yeah, we are super excited to get into it today, guys. We're over 100 days of reading the Bible, and if you have not if you have not kept up with every single day, that's okay. Definitely keep up with the podcast and then just jump right back in there today. And if this is your first time, you know, joining us, just start today or go back and read parts that you want. But that's kind of why we want to do the podcast, to just keep everyone up to date. And of course, we can't cover every detail on the podcast, but we can get down to business. So yes, today we're doing something different.
Wow, we are. We said, you know, why don't we just, I mean, we're here together. We're about to have word time. We need to record a podcast. Why don't we just have word time together on the podcast? And we just do it together with you guys. And that's where we're at. That's what we're going to do. And maybe we'll just start doing this all the time because we're sitting in the house, bored in the house because we're in the house bored.
Bored in the house, so I'm in the house bored.
So might as well try this out. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So, because, you know, we woke up super early and we're like, you know, we have to read it anyway. So let's just do it together. So we actually want to do it with you guys. So today our reading is in the book of Ruth and we're super excited. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to take you through our process. We're going to read through it and then kind of just do some observations along the way and hit our interpretation and application. If you aren't familiar, we do a method called inductive Bible study, which has us observing, interpreting, and applying the scripture. So let's do it. We're doing it live here. There's no planning. There's no prep. And we're ready.
We're just going to read and talk. Read and talk. And it's April 7th. So whenever this comes out, we'll be after that. So, but, you know, that's travel okay. back. Exactly. Remember what you read with us.
Yes. So we are here in Ruth, the book of Ruth. Also, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, guys. You don't want to miss out on any. We're going to be posting a lot more and a lot more off our schedule, a lot of bonus episodes and content. I'm crossing my fingers. And
right.
But yeah, so make sure you subscribe. And also we've updated our YouTube channel, so make sure you go check that out there. So let's get it started. So I'm going to start by reading Ruth 1. All right, let's get it going. Okay, Ruth 1. During this time of the judges, there was a famine in the land. A man left Bethlehem in Judah with his wife and two sons to stay in the territory of Moab for a while. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephratites from Bethlehem in Judah. They entered the fields of Moab and settled there. Naomi's husband Elimelech died, and she was left with her two sons. Her sons took Moabite women as their wives. One was named Orpah, I almost said Oprah, and the second one was named Ruth. After they lived in Moab, About 10 years, both Malon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two children and without her husband. She and her daughter-in-law set out to return from the territory of Moab because she had heard in Moab that the Lord had paid attention to his people's need by providing them food. Wow. She left the place where she had been living, accompanied by her two daughter-in-laws, and traveled along the road leading back to the land of Judah. Naomi said to them, "Each of you go back to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown to the dead and to me. May the Lord grant each of you rest in the house of a new husband." She kissed them and then wept loudly. They said to her, "We insist on returning with you to your people." But Naomi replied, "Return home, my daughters. Why do you want to go with me? Am I able to have more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. Go on, for I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me to have a husband tonight and to bear sons, would you be willing to wait for them to grow up? Would you restrain yourselves from marrying? No, my daughters, my life is too bitter for you to share, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." Again they wept loudly, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Follow your sister-in-law." But Ruth replied, "Don't plead with me to abandon you or to return and not follow you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you live, I will live. And your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me and do so severely if anything but death separates you and me." When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped talking to her. The two of them travel until they came to Bethlehem. When they entered Bethlehem, the whole town was excited about their arrival, and the local women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara," she answered, "for the Almighty has made me very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has opposed me and the Almighty has afflicted me?" So Naomi came back from the territory of Moab, and her daughter-in-law Ruth the Moabites. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So that's the first chapter. Lauren, what's one thing that just stuck out to you?
Okay. Well, I think one thing sticking out to me first about this is Ruth. I was thinking, man, maybe Ruth is an Enneagram 6 because she's very loyal. But right. I mean, she goes back to her loyalty. It seems like she, during this time of being married to an Israelite man, being with her mother-in-law, Naomi, she becomes convinced of their God, our God. And I wonder if that is a big part of why she wants to stay with her. She's like, "Your people are my people. Your God is my God. Where you die, I'll die, and I'll be buried." So I just really, I think her loyalty stuck out to me. And she's clearly convinced in some way, like, you know, the God that you guys serve, this people, I want to be a part of this. Like, this is me now. This is who I am now.
Right. And that's so interesting, because when I was reading the beginning, I made the delineation of that, like, so Naomi and her husband, her sons, they were what we would call Christians or people of God, or in this time Jews. They were in the tribe of Judah, which means that they were in the people of God. They left Judah and went to Moab, which is a, you know, not part of the 12 tribes, not part of. So the Moabs were what's it called when they're not Gentiles? They were Gentiles. So they had different gods and things like that, but the sons still married them. So that's why when they're departing, Naomi's like, "Hey, go back to your people, go back to your gods, you know, serve, you know, your people and your gods and whatnot." And so I just thought that that was super interesting. Like, she must have either, like, got saved or, like, yeah, convinced of God's goodness or faithfulness, or maybe it was just, I don't know, her personality, like, "No, I'm loyal." Because the thing about this is, it may not seem like a big deal, but women being without a husband, it kind of was low-key a death sentence in this time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you economically, I mean, you could kind of make for yourself, but it was just going to be a hard life, like street life, you know, it's just going to be hard. So it was kind of a death sentence, which is why Naomi was so sick about it.
Yeah, and you know, that's interesting too, because the Israelites had a lot of laws protecting women if you were widowed. You know, like, okay, I mean, we read all of these before, but stuff like, okay, you need to take your dead brother's wife to be your, you know, you need right. to. So there's a lot of protections that maybe were not happening in Moab or whatever. I mean, right. we know all these surrounding people groups, a lot of these laws and stuff that God made was to help the Israelites not to be so harsh and brutal like these people groups. You know, don't sacrifice your babies. Don't just leave widows out here hanging.
Yeah.
So that could have been a really convincing, just like the statutes and laws that the Lord set up in the Israelites to be a part of their culture. Ruth is like, no, it actually is terrible. Moab is like terrible and your people are awesome. Your God is awesome. So that could have been a part of it too.
Man, that's amazing that you bring that up, because a lot of people look at, you know, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, all these laws, and they're like, God doesn't want us to eat shrimp, and he says, you know, to kill people, you know, but what you don't understand is, like, basically all these laws are the kindness of God. They are setting the Jews and God's people morally to protect people who are in, like you said, these compromising situations and things like that. So it really is good to have a holistic view of these things. That have just, I hear so many people be like, well, in Leviticus, it says, you know, this and this and this, and they kind of quote one or two things, and it's just really out of balance. Another thing that I loved about this chapter, and then we can go into chapter two, is the whole, this super, super famous verse. A lot of people use it in the context of romantic relationships and weddings. You know, the wherever you go, I'll go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. But I just want to point out that this originally was quoted in the context of a platonic friendship between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, and how this was said to her in a time of probably the worst time in Naomi's life ever, and where a time where Ruth had legitimate reason to leave her, like legitimate reason to leave her, and she chose to stay. And I thought that was awesome, because it's in the, because it literally is fully self-serving to Naomi. Ruth is being completely selfless here, because she knows her mother-in-law will have a better chance and a better life with her by her side. And so I just thought that that's interesting, that contrast of how a lot of people use it in romantic relationships, but the original, and that's not wrong at all, but the original context is in friendships.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting. Okay, let's do chapter two.
Chapter two. Ruth works in Boaz's field. Now there was a wealthy and influential man in Bethlehem named Boaz, who was a relative of Naomi's husband, Elimelech. One day, Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go out into the harvest fields to pick up the stalks of grain left behind by anyone who is kind enough to let me do it." Naomi replied, "All right, my daughter, go ahead." So Ruth went out to gather grain behind the harvesters, and as it happened, she found herself working in a field that belonged to Boaz, the relative of her father-in-law, Elimelech. While she was there, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you," he said. "The Lord bless you," the harvesters replied. Then Boaz asked his foreman, "Who is that young woman over there? Who does she belong to?" And the foreman replied, "She is the young woman from Moab who came back with Naomi. She asked me this morning if she could gather grain behind the harvesters. She has been hard at work ever since, except for a few minutes' rest in the shelter." Boaz went over and said to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter, stay right here with us when you gather grain. Don't go to any other fields. Stay right behind the young women working in my field. See which part of the field they are harvesting and then follow them. I have warned the young men not to treat you roughly, and when you are thirsty, help yourself to the water they have drawn from the well." Ruth fell at his feet and thanked him warmly. "What have I done to deserve such kindness?" she asked. "I am only a foreigner." "Yes, I know," Boaz replied, "but I also know about everything you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. I have heard how you left your father and mother and your own land to live here among complete strangers. May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you fully for what you have done." "I hope I continue to please you, sir," she replied. "You have comforted me by speaking so kindly to me, even though I am not one of your workers." At mealtime, Boaz called to her. come over here and help yourself to some food. You can dip your bread in the sour wine. So she sat with his harvesters, and Boaz gave her some roasted grain to eat. She ate all she wanted and still had some left over. When Ruth went back to work again, Boaz ordered his young men, let her gather grain right among the sheaves without stopping her, and pull out some heads of barley from the bundles and drop them on purpose for her. Let her pick them up and don't give her a hard time. So Ruth gathered barley there all day, and when she beat out the grain that evening, it filled an entire basket. She carried it back into town and showed it to her mother-in-law. Ruth also gave her the roasted grain that was left over from her meal. Where did you gather all this grain today? Naomi asked. Where did you work? May the Lord bless the one who helped you. So Ruth told her mother-in-law about the man in whose field she had worked. She said, the man I worked with today is named Boaz. May the Lord bless him, Naomi told her daughter-in-law. He is showing kindness to us as well as to your dead husband. That man is one of your closest relatives, one of your family redeemers. Then Ruth said, what's more, Boaz even told me to come back and stay with his harvesters until the entire harvest is completed. Good, Naomi exclaimed. Do as he said, my daughter. Stay with his young women right through the harvest, through the whole harvest. You might be harassed in other fields, but you'll be safe with him. So Ruth worked alongside the woman in Boaz's fields and gathered grain with them until the end of the barley harvest. Then she continued working with them through the wheat harvest in early summer, and all the while she lived with her mother-in-law. That's a lot of harvest seasons.
That's a lot of harvest seasons.
She said, I'm in this harvest.
No, that was actually really crazy, though. I think that this whole story of Ruth and Boaz is just so interesting. So obviously, you know, we know Boaz as, you know, kind of like what we use today in like Christian churches and Christian settings is an analogy for like our husband, like, I'm waiting for my Boaz, blah, 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 you know. But I think it's really cool to see what Ruth was doing here, because her character really preceded her, you know, and that's what made Boaz notice her, because he asked who this young woman is. She obviously probably looked different from them and was a new person. And then, but then also the servant who was reporting back to Boaz, he first mentioned her, her hard work. And then also Boaz had also heard what she had done for Naomi. And so those are the things that kind of drew Boaz to her.
Yeah, Boaz was kind of like, oh, she a real one. We gonna keep her fed. You gonna be good, girl. You taken care of. Yeah, and just the significance, again, of this act by Boaz is so huge, because yeah, it was really cut for women. Once your husband died, like, it's your, like, for real food. I mean, she's walking after them, like, picking up the scraps. And so, yeah, that was, like, a huge, huge thing. Did you get any other observations from this, Taylor?
I also noticed how, just really quickly, how Ruth, she still submitted to Naomi. Like, Ruth is a full-grown woman. But even in verse 2 of chapter 2, she says, will you let me go into the fields and gather grain? You know, and I'm thinking, why would she ask her that? You know, but she still submitted to her. And then, yeah, she really... yeah, she continued to listen, even towards the end of the chapter. When Naomi tells her, my daughter, it is good for you to work with this female servant so that nothing will happen to you. So she just still is submitted. Like, her heart posture is just such of a servant. It's so humble, and she's just so submitted. So things like that kind of just stick out to me. What about you?
Yeah, I think that stuck out to me, too. I just think the provision... that they are experiencing is awesome. That's right. All I really have, you know.
Yeah, and this is really cool, because as a single mom for the past year, I've been looking in the Bible for like how, like, for single moms, and I'm just realizing literally in this moment that this is a single mom who God is providing for. Like, whenever you see single moms, God really like miraculously provides for them, and I think that that's really cool. Like, no matter what phase you're in your life, like, the Lord really will provide provision, even if it's less than ideal, which in most cases, I'm going to say, not all, but in most cases, being a single mom can be less than ideal. So that's really cool to see the Lord just coming through as usual.
Yes, let's keep reading.
Cool. Chapter 3. Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, shouldn't I find rest for you so that you will be taken care of? Now, isn't Boaz our relative? Haven't you been working with his female servants? This evening, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfumed oil, and wear your best clothes. Go down to the threshing floor, but don't let the man know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, notice the place where he's lying. Go in and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will explain to you what you should do." So Ruth said to her, "I will do everything you say." She went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law had charged her to do. After Boaz ate and drank and was in good spirits, he went to lie down at the end of a pile of barley, and she came secretly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. At midnight, Boaz was startled, turned over, and there, lying at his feet, was a woman. So he asked, "Who are you?" "I am Ruth, your servant," she replied. "Take me under your wing, for you are a family redeemer." Then he said, "May the Lord bless you, my daughter. You have shown more kindness now than before, because you have not pursued younger men, whether rich or poor. Now, don't be afraid, my daughter. I will do for you whatever you say, since all the people in my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Yes, it is true that I am a family redeemer, but there is a redeemer closer than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem you, that's good. Let him redeem you. But if he doesn't want to redeem you, as the Lord lives, I will. Now lay down until morning." So she lay down at his feet until morning, but got up while it was still dark. Then Boaz says, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." And he told Ruth, "Bring your shawl you're wearing and hold it out." When she held it out, he shoveled 6 measures of barley into her shawl, and she went into the town. She went to her mother-in-law, Naomi, who asked her, "What happened, my daughter?" Then Ruth told her everything the man had done for her. She said, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley because he said, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Naomi said, "My daughter, wait until you find out how things go, for he won't rest unless he resolves this today."
Wow. Okay. I have so many questions / things I want to look up.
Yes. So like what?
So one thing was, just the cultural significance of this. I feel like I've heard teachings on this before and like explanations of what that meant for her to go lay at his feet. Mm-hmm. And like, so I'm trying to remember what that is. I don't remember though. So I want to look that up. Also too, I don't think I ever noticed in this story that he's like, "You could have gone to be with some other guy, but you were loyal." And my version is NLT, which is like super basic. They translate by the sentence instead of the word, I think. I don't know. Not the word of God, but like by every single individual word. So I am like, I wonder if she could have gotten some other random man and like lived a fine life, but maybe Naomi wouldn't have been taken care of if she didn't continue in their family line. That's what I'm wondering, because, or was she just genuinely like, "Boaz seems cool, so I'm trying to be with him," but Naomi told her what to do. So I don't know. We should look it up.
Right. I know I have a lot of questions too, because I know that there's a lot of cultural implications to like him. I mean, her laying at his feet and just different things like that. So you're right. There are like a lot of questions there. That would be really cool, like to do kind of like a little follow up, because Ruth is so cool. And I really love highlighting women in the Bible and stuff like that. One of the things I kind of observed is that Naomi literally told Ruth to get cute. And, you know, if you know our mother.
I know. That's why I was like, oh, my God, Tanya.
Yeah. God. If you know our mother, that is her thing. So, but I think it's cool. I'm with it, too. I think that how you look, how you present yourself, your hygiene, your best clothing is important. Does that mean you need to be face beat, heels on every moment when you go to Trader Joe's? No, if that's not your thing, don't do it. But I think presenting yourself well speaks of your self-esteem. And it speaks to like the whole, if you're in the dating process or the courtship process or whatever. So, you know, that stuck out to me because, you know. That's something we talk about.
So I highlighted my little section that I want to look up and have questions about. So during the interpretation section, we're going to come back to it.
Okay, yes, we'll come back. So let's do chapter four really quick and finish this up.
Okay, Boaz marries Ruth. Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then the family redeemer he had mentioned came by. So Boaz called out to him, "Come over here and sit down, friend. I want to talk to you." So they sat down together. Then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, "You know Naomi, who came back from Moab? She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. If you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away, because I am next in line to redeem it after you." The man replied, "All right, I'll redeem it." Then Boaz told him, "Of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family." "Then I can't redeem it," the family redeemer replied, "because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land. I cannot do it." Now in those days, it was the custom in Israel for anyone transferring a right of purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal as he said to Boaz, "You buy the land." Then Boaz said to the elders and to the crowd standing around, "You are witnesses that today I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. And with the land I have acquired Ruth the Moabite widow of Mahlon to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the family name of her dead husband and to inherit the family property here in his hometown. You are all witnesses today." Then the elders and all the people standing in the gate replied, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, from whom all the nation of Israel descended. May you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of our ancestor Perez, the son of Tamar and Judah." And that was it, because today only has us reading chapter 4, 1 through 12. I had another observation that is a question after reading this that maybe we can come back to. I'm very curious about this transaction situation. When it was just the land, he was like, "Cool, I'll do that." But then it was like, okay, but you also have to take Ruth as a wife. And then he's like, "Oh no, that's going to jeopardize my estate." And I'm like, how's that jeopardizing your estate?
Right.
I would love to know. We should look that up.
Right. That is like super interesting, because it falls in line with like their, you know, societal and traditional rules and how their family works and everything like that. I know it may seem weird to be like keeping things in the family, like, okay, my husband died, let me go marry his brother. But that traditionally was like the way you kind of keep things in the family. You kind of keep the bloodline going, even though to us that's strange. I don't suggest it to do now. But yeah, for me, I noticed just in general, noticing Boaz's heart position and just saying, and I don't know if this is 3 and 4, but it definitely, he was showed this in 3 and 4 of how he said he just had this heart posture to cover them and to look out for them, which was his obligation really as a family member, as a male who was in line to be a possible redeemer. But also, as you see, as he talked to the other guy about it, who was first in line, the dedication level of that can vary. Because like Lauren said, like he, Boaz, you know, went to the other guy who could have been the redeemer, Elimelech. And Elimelech was like, "Okay, I'll get the field, but I'm not trying to like cover these women really, you know." But Boaz really had that full dedication, like, "No, I'll fully take care of you to the full extent that I can." And I really love that, because he has a heart to just cover women. And I love seeing that in men. I think that's ideally how men should be. And of course, that looks different in different lives, whether that's a father covering a daughter, whether that's a, you know, of course, a husband covering a wife. But even in general, whether that's just a stranger man covering a stranger woman, I just think that that's really beautiful to see.
Okay, we're back. We took a little pause to look up the answers to some of these questions that we had in our observation portion, and to think on our interpretations, which is basically just answering these questions and just expounding more upon kind of what we observed. So the first main question that we had that we looked up in commentaries was from chapter 3 about what's up with her laying at his feet, what's up with all of that.
Yeah, because this is literally like when we do our devotions in the morning, we do our reading, this is what we do. You know, read through and then you have to look things up, use commentaries, things like that. We use online commentaries. We're using actual book commentaries. I like the Moody Bible commentary, but I was trying to figure out what she was doing with his feet because I didn't understand. And we obviously can assume that there's cultural relevance there. So one of the things that I found is that in general, with a man who has servants, Eastern servants, they oftentimes slept in the same chamber or tent with their master, not in a sexual way, but just that may be like the only place to sleep. There weren't just like everyone gets their own house. Like it kind of wasn't that situation. And so a lot of times if they wanted covering or like marriage or just things like that, and custom would allow them to, like Ruth applied to Boaz in that way. Obviously every single person doesn't. You have to be in their family line or however you qualify for that, I guess. If you are allowed to, based upon the customs, benefit from covering, you're allowed to put that part, like when you guys are sleeping, in the sleeping chambers of that covering or that literal cover over you. And there wasn't like a sexual undertone to it. There wasn't like a, I'm trying to sneak into your bed. Even though it could have been seemed like that from other customs or traditions or from other perspectives, but that's not what it was. Even the way that Boaz kind of addresses her, he says, woman of excellence, you know, he greeted her in the name of the Lord. Especially if you look at verse 10, he calls her a virtuous woman. And we see that, and he calls her a woman of excellence, which is really similar to the Proverbs 31 woman.
This basically says like, that was a way that you asked to get married.
Right. That's the way you showed interest or show that you respond, that you know you're kind of responding in a way, because obviously based upon the customs she was one of the people who's allowed to marry Boaz, and so that was kind of her way of showing interest that was appropriate for her customs and her culture at the time. It wasn't a sexual thing, it wasn't an inappropriate thing, and you can tell he honored her. So even when she gets there, she is really direct with what she wants. She says, you know, spread your covering over me, because you're a kinsman redeemer for me. And so her intentions are pure as well. And so this wasn't a sexual thing, but it was an advancement saying, hey, you know, based upon our relationship, based upon our families, based upon customs, based upon the Lord, this would be something I would be interested in, and I need a covering. And so that is kind of the depth of her uncovering his feet, kind of going in. A commentary I was reading also was kind of saying that she came secretly, but it was with discretion, but not deception. Like she wasn't trying to lie or do something that wasn't allowed or do something not moral or sinful, but she did use discretion. And I think, you know, of course, Ruth and Boaz are really used as an analogy for dating. And I also just think, not to get too much into the whole dating thing, 'cause that's a whole nother convo, but I think that's a good principle for dating, that you can keep things, you can operate in discretion, but definitely not deception.
Yes, true, real. T. And that kind of goes all the tea. And that kind of goes into what my answer for my question a little bit.
What was your question?
My question was in chapter 4 with this other closer kinsman redeemer. I guess he was closer in relation to Ruth's late husband, Naomi's family. So he would be the first person to pick up on that responsibility of taking them in and taking in their land. So I was like, why is he saying no to this as soon as marriage comes into the picture? And the commentary that I was reading really answer even more of my question, because it showed too why Boaz responded in the way that he did. So Ruth is at his feet. He's like, okay, go quietly. Don't let anyone know. Like, you know, leave quietly. I'll figure this out. And my commentary was saying that he did that so that he can kind of finesse the situation, but basically get this guy, like this close redeemer, like, so that he could take him by surprise, just so that he would really show his true colors. Because this guy, the right honorable thing, the law of the Lord, was for him to act as this redeemer, you know, not just take this land that he gets for free because somebody in his family died, but also to help these women who are his family. And so Boaz must have had some hint that this guy was going to be like, listen, I'm not trying to do all that. So he was like, okay, go quietly so we can just have this organic situation. I'm going to go to this guy, and he brings up the land. And it's all cool when it's just some land that you can get. But then he's like, oh, also, too, you have to take in Naomi and Ruth. And that's when he's like, oh, actually, never mind. That's going to mess up my inheritance. So it messes up his inheritance, the commentary was saying, probably because he already had sons and he had already kind of like, they had said in his mind, okay, my one son is going to get this land. My other son's going to get this land. My other son is going to get this land. They all were probably already set on that. Who knows how old his sons were. And so this is going to throw a wrench in the plan. If I have to marry this woman, she's young, she's going to have kids. I have to split up my land with more kids. I don't want to have kids with this lady. And then, you know, my sons that I love and I know aren't going to get this land that we've kind of already known that they were going to get. And I have to take care of these women. And so that was just like, basically, he's just like, I don't want to do all that. I'm not trying to take care of these ladies. Just a really, like, he set and focused on what his situation already is. So I thought that was very interesting. It's just like the contrast between this guy and Boaz, that character contrast of like, Boaz is genuinely trying to take care of these women. He's trying to honor God by taking care of these women. He's a loving person. And this other guy's just kind of selfish, set in his ways, not really trying to go out of his way to help. So I thought that was very interesting.
Exactly. Because that really is his cultural obligation. Because the first question that came up in my mind when you were talking is, well, is he wrong? I mean, he could say no, but you're right. Like, he, you know, has the resources, he has the capability, and he chooses not to. Obviously, we're not in the New Testament, but to me, Jesus, or let me not say Jesus, I'm not gonna fake with you, I'm not sure if it's Jesus. Actually, I don't think it's Jesus, because I think it's in the book of James. But in the New Testament, true religion is defined by taking care of the orphan and the widows. And that has been the heart of God for, and of course, we have to love God, love people. So that's not just, you know, you can't just take care of orphans and widows and not love God and think that, you know, you're saved. But honestly, one of the biggest ways you can tell your heart for the Lord is how you take care of the least of these. And a lot in culturally here, and even in our culture now, a lot of times it's orphans and widows. And so that's just really interesting to even see that here in the Old Testament. Just that heart that Boaz already has, still the heart of God. And yeah, so that's why he becomes a kinsman redeemer, and he ends up in the lineage, you know, of Jesus and whatnot. So wait, yeah, so that's like really cool. And I think it's cool how you talked about character, because that kind of leads me into my application. Like, when I look at this whole book and this whole chapter, like I've been referring to, people look at this for dating so much, but it's just like, that's not really what I see. I see a woman of character. Like, she's not doing any of this stuff for like, let me try to get a man, so let me be nice to this lady and I'll stay with her. Okay, let me go to work so I can, like, hopefully it's a man in my job. Like, she was fully prepared to be single with no kids for the rest of her life and take care of this woman, or for a long time at least. And her character also preceded her name, being just that super servant, being hard worker, being a sacrificial giver, being super loyal, and being submitted to her mother-in-law, being submitted to God. And then is submitting to even just the cultures of the land that God set up. She's not even from there. And then ultimately submitting to Boaz. So that really took me, that character, man.
Yeah. And I think, too, just Ruth and Boaz were on the same page. Like, that is cool. I mean, they both, like, their root motivation was to take care of someone else. And I think Boaz saw that in Ruth. Ruth eventually saw that in Boaz. And so, yeah, it just, I think that is my application too, is that, you know, yeah, that is the heart that God has. That is, and that's the heart that he has for us, that he wants us to have as well, where, you know, you're taking care of others. You're serving me. You're taking care of others. And things work out. Now they ended up in this awesome relationship. Not necessarily saying that that's always the end outcome.
But a lot of times it will be. It may not end in marriage, but it will bless your relationships. Most likely. Yeah, it will. Whether it blesses that direct relationship or whether it blesses you in another relationship in another time, but it will bless your relationships. I think the question for me that I'm just thinking of is, like, who are you called to serve in this season and how? Like, literally, who are you called to serve and how? And if we focus on that, it takes the selfishness out of our relationships. It takes the expectation. Now, you probably won't be disappointed, let down, you know, all this stuff, because you're expecting these people to fulfill your needs. And if you just say, hey, I'm going to serve, and if I get a benefit back, that's awesome. But if not, you know, I'm going to be a servant.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what every Christian says about dating. Well, it's just, I just try to serve him, and that's all. And a lot of times you'd be like, oh my God, okay. But that really is real. I mean, like, if you're walking through this life, like, I'm fully covered and taken care of by God, and now I'll just serve. And, you know, that's just a great, satisfying way to move throughout life. You know, and everything else is just bonus.
Right. It really, really is. That's so true. And the key is, like you said, satisfying, being satisfied with God. Like, I'm fully content. If this person doesn't serve me back, I'm cool, you know. And of course, you need to have appropriate boundaries and things like that. We're not just saying, like, just be destroyed by people, have unhealthy boundaries, and, you know, give away all your money and don't have any money for rent. Like, no one's saying, like, do all of that. But serving people and loving people and realizing, okay, I'm going to serve this person. They're still going to fail me. My best friend is still going to hurt my feelings. My parent is this. My child is definitely going to disappoint me or betray me or whatever. And still, like, serving and loving. So that's, like, my application, which is hard as crap.
But I think this story is awesome, too, because it does make room for that humanity of, like, she wasn't just like, okay, I'm just going to go. Kill myself and no I and like I don't know, God provided for her too in the midst of her just having a servant's mindset, and she didn't have to, like, ignore that, like, no, it's not about me. She's like, right. No, I'm trying to get married too. I'm right. Also trying to be provided for. So I think there's that balance too of, like, listen, my mindset is on loving and serving others, but I also acknowledge that God loves me. He wants to provide for me. And I love her boldness of just like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I'm about to go lay at this dude's feet. We're gonna make it very clear what we want out here. And, you know, she had a humble heart, so I can imagine that she would have responded well if Boaz was like, nah. But I think that's cool too. It's like God also provided for her in the midst of her having this servant's heart and the servant attitude. So I think that that's cool. So yeah, I would totally agree. I think my application as well is like, yeah, that heart posture of just a humble servant and being loyal to God, you know, saying, can you say that to the Lord? Like, your people are my people. Like,
ooh. Yeah. Your values are my values. Mm-hmm. The way you speak is the way I speak. Your mind is my mind. That's hard, honey. Yeah. Child, listen.
And moving in that and trusting that he will provide in that. and it's not just your own ways. That is my struggle for real. I'm just like, listen, God, it's been a minute. I mean, I feel like the thing that I probably desire the most would be to be dating and married, and you know, trusting that God's ways are gonna get you there is tough sometimes.
It's tough, honey.
It's tough sometimes, but yeah, just trusting that. I think that is what I need to take away from this.
Ooh, yeah, that is so real. That's so real. So this was really good. I actually loved like doing this together. We may do more of these while we're in this coronavirus social distancing. So definitely subscribe. Make sure you stay tuned. Follow us on Instagram at @BrownGirlBible_ and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Brown Girl Bible.
Wow. And civic duty plug. The deadline to apply for your absentee ballot so you can vote from home has been extended. So go online. You can go to ohiovotes.org. You can go anywhere. Just search absentee ballot for whatever your county is, Summit County, Franklin County. Download that. Pop it in the mail, girl. Don't go out to the poll. I mean, I don't even know if they're having poll voting anymore, but you can vote from your house, so you should. Okay, well, that's it.
Yes, guys, thanks for kicking it with us. We are gonna see you again very soon. We really should do one of these live one day. I put that out there. That's a big thing.
I got my quarantine fit, so I know. I don't know about me being on any cameras.
That's the thing. We have to like do visuals and like be together, but like look together. We're keeping it together, but are we camera ready? Not sure. Not sure. So, but we might. We might, Lauren.
Okay.
Okay, guys. So thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.